Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Millennial Movie Mix. I'm one of your hosts, Ashley, and with me, as always, is
Kristen
And Justin.
and Sarah.
And this week, we are covering Set It Off.
From
1996. Good job, Sarah. That was
Yeah.
unison. This film had a budget of $9 million,
And they spent
and
it all.
from what I found,
They spent it
what's
all.
up?
Besides the phenomenal cast, they spent it all on blanks.
Bullets,
I'm
yeah.
like, well, actually, so I can't substantiate this, but apparently they spent half of the budget in order to play the song from The Godfather.
Oh shit. Oh shit.
It paid off. It paid.
It really did. It did.
So $9 million, and it makes anywhere between $36 and $41 million.
Oh my
I
gosh.
saw both numbers reported.
Huh.
It's
That's pretty decent.
directed by F. Gary Gray, and he's the same guy who has done the new Men in Black International, Fate of the Furious, Straight Outta Compton, Law Abiding Citizen, The
Ooh.
Italian Job, and he did the original classic Friday with Ice Cube and Chris Tucker. And Set It Off was his next film after Friday. They were like, we saw what you can do. Now let's see what else you can do. And F. Gary Gray, I mean, he's done music videos. I think for like Whitney Houston and Brandy and Cypress Hill and Outkast, R. Kelly, TLC, Dr. Dre, Queen Latifah, I think. So I mean, he's been in the game for a long time. It is written by a woman named Takashi Buford. And she wrote some movies that I'm familiar with from the 90s. But I mean, have you guys ever heard of Booty Call?
No, is it a porn?
It's
I've heard of it, but I've not seen it.
not a porn. It's about two guys who are trying to get laid. So they
So,
called it Booty Call.
almost a porn.
Yeah. And she wrote House Party 3.
Okay.
So I don't know if you've heard of Kid and Play or not,
No.
and House Party. The soundtrack to this film hit number 4 on the Billboard.
It was a
It
great
did.
soundtrack. Yeah, it
The
was.
very end song, the Missing You song, that had in the same song Brandy, Gladys Knight, and Chaka Khan.
Fuck.
And the soundtrack itself had Seal, Ray J, it had In Vogue, it had Bone Thugs and Harmony, it had Queen Latifah and Busta Rhymes.
Excellent
Yeah,
soundtrack.
so it was not playing around. The movie was not playing around.
Oh no.
I don't remember when I first saw this movie because I feel like this movie has always been a part of my life.
Yeah, and this is one that I had never seen before meeting you, and it's, so this is another one that you showed me first.
Yeah, this was the first time that I had seen this movie, but I just every time we watch a movie that's like pre-2000, I'm just like, oh my gosh, the old tech. It just takes me back to childhood.
Right?
The what stood out to you in this one is old tech.
The hydraulics, that used to be like the hottest shit. Like you knew that someone was cool and like rolling in it, and that's all they would ever do on Pimp My Ride was flames and hydraulics. And
Yeah.
so yeah, that
And then
really
did
took
you
me
see
back.
they actually had a car phone, like a corded
Yes.
car phone?
Yes.
Yes. I don't know if we saw a car phone in another movie, but that was like, yeah, car phones.
Tenacious D had one.
Oh, okay, yes. Thank you,
You're
Sarah.
welcome.
And then you hadn't seen this movie either, right?
No, I have not.
This is another one of, I mean, we started the podcast and our original premise, sitting around was like, there are so many good movies that these 95ers have not seen.
Yeah.
You know, being, you know, there are, you know, we found some movies that I haven't seen, but not, I don't think we've found any that I haven't, you know, heard of. You know, we've talked about, we've kind of accumulated a created a cumulative list, if I can talk there, of like quintessential or like films that are close to us that we want to share.
Right.
And so we were sitting around and, you know, we were thinking about what have you not seen? And I, of course, had to put Set It Off on the list. I had this on VHS tape. Again.
Yeah.
And then I bought it on DVD when it came out on DVD.
Obsolete.
If it's on TV, I watch it.
And you still own a copy.
I still own a copy on DVD. So I, again, some of these films, it's not going to be a surprise how I feel about it. But I still like the breakdown and the talk, and I love to hear what other people have to say.
Say it. I liked it, but it pissed me off.
Yes.
It really, like, this is, again, this is another one that I had to stop. I was pissed the fuck off.
Oh, wow.
Sarah, were you triggered?
I was triggered.
Do you want me to reveal some of these triggers?
Yes.
Pull back the curtain.
Okay. Betrayal, robbery, guns, violence, murder, racism, sexism, police brutality, foster care, CPS, loss of a friend, and getting caught.
Getting caught.
I remember that time with my hand in the cookie jar.
And now you feel a little bit of shame every time you eat a cookie.
That's right. I love how Trigger started with betrayal and ended with getting caught. That's a nice Trigger sandwich you gave us there, Ashley.
Hope you enjoyed it.
Kristen, do you have an olive for the top, or did she cover it all?
We had some N-words in there.
Oh, yeah.
So, murder.
Murder.
Yeah.
Murder.
I think you got everything else. Guns and murder and N-words.
They smell pot on the roof. Is pot a trigger?
No.
No.
Not anymore.
No.
Well, depending on whatever crowd you roll with, I know some people who still say some very negative things about pot and pot smokers.
Well, they probably don't know much.
They get 5 stars canceled.
That's right. I don't even know your name.
I'm so blessed to you, sir.
I'm done, fucker. All right, so I wonder sometimes if, because of this film, I think it's a fucking serious movie.
Oh, yeah.
And it deals with police brutality. And, I mean, I don't know if brutality or if just an overzealous, violent nature. And I know we're going to get into more specifics, but, I mean, I felt like in some scenes there were, like, 50 cops.
Oh, yeah. Like,
and at least, like you say, they spent the budget on blanks, meaning that there was a lot of gunfire, right?
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
And so we've got that. And in 1996, you know, they're presenting the cops shooting an innocent person, and I can't go without saying that we're in 2021, and that's still in the news.
Oh,
that's
hell
still,
yeah,
propelling entire conversations, and there are people who think that it's just started now. And I think that this film is a very accurate piece of information in history to let you know that there were people who were trying to talk about this for a long time.
Oh, yeah. I also think it's interesting that you did point out, like, that you commented that they spent so much money on blanks, because I think it was an artistic part of the movie that they did go overkill on the cops.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that you did feel like overwhelmed looking at that and being like, that's a lot of cops for this situation.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Because it was part of the commentary of the movie.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know that it did anything all right, this is going to be weird because it's one of my favorite films, but I don't think that it did anything to make better the problem it was trying to highlight or make a commentary on. I think it simply just turned a light on it.
Yeah, I agree.
And I don't know then if, so then there are lots of people who would tell you that just talking about something makes it a problem. But then I think that we learn otherwise, right? That talking about it, like, helps to solve the problem.
Yeah.
So I do think that the whole film itself is can be a very triggering, uncomfortable thing, because you've got moments in here where, like, some of your characters have never been out of the city that they're in. They don't think they can get out ever from the city that they're in. Every one of these characters, except for maybe Cleo, is like feeling let down, or like they let down, or that there is no future or path to future. You've got Stoney, well, you've got Jada Pinkett Smith acting her ass off and going through all of the levels of shame, humiliation, what some people will do in order to save their family, or, I mean, and sacrifice their dignity to try to give somebody else dignity. I mean, just the lives of these women are so realistic that I don't know if, I mean, people who are watching this are going to identify so heavily. And I think that then that's why also we feel, because everyone feels like they're struggling, trying to keep their head above water. And these women are the same way.
Right.
Yes. And like, I feel like their stories are so realistic because, like, in nursing, I've experienced like people and women like this. And it's just like it's just all the more sad.
And but it also highlights a strength.
Yes.
And an unusual strength that comes from a unique kind of diversity that many of us who live in privileged bubbles don't have to face. And so, I mean, even people who are, quote, woke don't truly understand. So then some people who never think about it, I think they might see this movie as an awesome shoot 'em up movie and miss the point.
Instead of seeing all the,
with hot women.
But I mean, I want to, before we go in and talk about the actual film, I want to remind our listeners that this is our second entry in our May Queens.
Oh, yeah.
And this film is full of awesome female powerhouse actresses.
Oh, hell yeah.
Who stands out to you?
Always remember Kimberly Elise because she's in Diary of a Mad Black Woman and I love her.
I'm so glad you said her. Do you know what other movie she stars in that that you famously read the book? Is she a ghost? Is she real?
Beloved.
Oh, that's right.
She's a succubus. Yeah,
that's right.
She's a succubus. Yeah. She's also in John Q. I think that's the Denzel Washington takes people hostage movie.
Yeah.
Sarah, you said Diary of a Mad Black Woman. She's also in Tyler Perry's Woman Thou Art Loose.
Yes.
And I remember watching both of those when they came out. I much preferred those. And then all of a sudden, like, because do you guys remember that Madea was in those movies?
Yeah.
All of a sudden, it was just all about
And then
Madea.
It was just about Madea.
Yeah.
That was a crazy thing that I witnessed there. She's also in, I love this film called Dope. Have you ever heard of it?
Yes. No. But I have not seen it.
Yeah. Oh my God. It's so awesome. I think maybe it came out in like 2015 or something. It's got a great soundtrack, great acting. And Kimberly Elise, I think she plays the main character's mom in that movie. I know that she's in that. And this was her very first film. Sarah.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Ashley, anybody stand out to you?
Oh God. I did not write down the actor's name, but Detective Strode.
Yeah. John C. McGinley.
Yeah.
From Scrubs.
Yes.
Yeah. He's also in Platoon, Point Break, Seven.
And I forgot he was in Seven.
Yeah. And have you guys ever seen the Belko experiment?
No.
No.
Oh, it like takes place in a foreign country where an office closes up and makes the employees kill each other.
What the fuck?
Yeah, he's in that movie.
I've forgotten about that.
Yeah. He's in a bunch of stuff. That guy. And I don't know how much I liked him in this movie, but I think he – his acting, I think, was –
I think he did a good job.
Was right on because it was nuanced.
Mm-hmm. It was really excellent.
Well, he also played, like, a very white guy.
I think so, too. Yeah.
And maybe he woke up a little bit by the end of the movie.
I think that's what we were supposed to see. Hang on for a second. Hang on.
Okay. Sorry. Well, that worked out because there's a noise too at the same time.
I used your cough as an opportunity to mute my phone because I hadn't yet.
Yes, it worked out.
Awesome.
We needed an intermission.
You have reached the middle of the film.
All right. Yeah, so I definitely recognized John C. McGinley, too. Although this was probably the first place that I saw him. And then later would have seen him pop up on Scrubs and would have been like, oh. Because he plays a completely different character on Scrubs.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, still kind of an asshole.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Very realistic portrayal of a physician.
You know, he's in Office Space, too.
Yes.
So that's just goes to show you that, yeah, he pops up where you're not expecting. Kristen, who stood out to you?
Jada Pinkett Smith.
Jada Pinkett Smith.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
There's a running theme here because I love these actresses and they pop up in films that I love. Jada Pinkett Smith is in one of my favorite movies to rewatch over and over. So she is in a film called Demon Knight, and this film is coming up that we're going to do when Halloween pops around.
I cannot wait for this one. I cannot wait for Demon Knight.
So don't look anything up. You just wait. I can't wait. So I, just like with Pam Grier, I prepared. I went through and I looked at these resumes, and I want you to know that so Jada Pinkett Smith is only listed in like 49 acting credits on Internet Movie Database.
Really?
Whereas Queen Latifah has 100 and Vivica Fox has 216.
Oh shit.
Oh god.
But yet what Jada Pinkett Smith has done, where do you guys know her from?
Matrix.
Yeah. Two and three.
Yes, two and three.
She married. Is that all? Yeah, she married Will
Smith. And she married Will Smith.
I'm glad that it's the younger, like the two of us that know because Will Smith's
Oh my gosh! Okay, Jada Pinkett Smith. All right, have you guys seen Madagascar?
Yes. Yes.
So she's Gloria. What the hippo? Yeah. She's Gloria the hippo.
Oh my god. I don't know if we'll ever do Madagascar, but I have some real nostalgia with that one.
Okay, we'll have to see what happens there.
Yeah.
Jada Pinkett Smith, she is in Menace to Society. Have you ever heard of this?
I've heard of it, but not seen it.
It's what's parodied in Don't Be a Menace to Society or to South Central, right? Drinking Your Juice in the Hood. By the Wayans brothers.
That sounds about right.
No.
For the time period.
Vivica Fox is actually in that movie. She's in the film Woo, where she plays the title character, kind of a funny romantic comedy with a comedian named Tommy Davidson. Of course, she's in Scream 2 in the very beginning.
Oh, I forgot. Forgot that.
Something that I didn't know if you'd be familiar with, Sarah, you might watch maybe like not the English dub versions, but there's something called Princess Mononoke.
Ah, yay.
Mononoke.
So she plays a character named Toki.
Oh, okay. I mean, I don't listen to it in English.
Yeah, that I didn't think you did. No, I don't. But so that's the English version. Yeah. Let's see. She is also in a film called If These Walls Could Talk, which is, oh my God, this film stars huge actresses. It's got Cher in it. It's got Cher directing.
Oh, shit.
It's all about women, women's rights, and different stories of abortion from, like, the 60s and then, like, the 70s and then the 90s. All about different little, like, short vignette stories of women, what they have to go through in order to get an abortion. I think, like, Demi Moore is in it. And I think she might have to, like, go to a hotel room in the 50s or something.
Oh, my God.
Shit.
But it's all, I think it all centers around maybe the same house. I know there's another one, If These Walls Could Talk, too, that I think is about gay rights. If I might be mistaken, but I remember watching both of those because they aired on some cable, maybe HBO, something like that.
Okay.
Have you ever heard of The Cosby Show?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, Jada Pinkett Smith popped up on The Cosby Show spinoff called A Different World about one of the Cosby daughters going to college. And this is one of the first things that she did. And she was on the show from 1991 to 93.
Shit. Okay.
And then 3 years later, she's in Set It Off.
I didn't even know there was a Cosby spinoff. I didn't even know that there was a Cosby spinoff.
Yeah, it followed the oldest daughter when she went to school, and then Lisa Bonet. And then after like a season or two, maybe just the first season, she was like, I don't want to do the show anymore. So then it turned into being, Kristen, do you remember we watched the show Dead Like Me and Jasmine Guy was on that show?
Yeah.
So she's on A Different World and the show becomes about her. Her name's like Whitley something. And like, it's just a really awesome show. But it's about a black college. So it's not, you know, something that a lot of people, you know or talk about because it's from the 80s. And, you know, it has starred a predominantly black cast. Although I think that Marissa Tomei might have been on it at some point in time too. I have to look it up. Anybody who might know, I don't know. I think that she did. And then Jada Pinkett Smith with The Nutty Professor. She played Carla Purdy. So I mean, we are making sure that we give cred to our May queens. Jada Pinkett Smith has been in a lot of stuff. And she's a producer. Did you guys know that she made documentaries and raises awareness for human trafficking?
No.
And getting rid of rape and raising awareness of political prisoners.
Shit. I did not know that.
And, you know, of course, you know, she's married to Will Smith, you know, and has two kids who are making a very, you know, awesome career path. And I don't know. They've kind of been in the news a lot, but I always felt like they kind of had a really kind of cool type relationship. They've been together since 1997.
Dang, that's a long time.
Yeah. So it was right after. And then like she had to leave the set of Set It Off to go film Scream 2. You guys have seen Scream 2?
Yeah.
No.
No. I don't know if that's on the list or not. Queen Latifah, who's a cover girl, is also in this movie. You guys know her from Chicago, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Hairspray. Mm-hmm. She is also in some quintessential cinema. She's in Jungle Fever. Have you ever heard of this?
I don't think so.
Heard of it, not seen
I've
it.
Seen like...
I've seen it. Samuel Jackson's also in it.
Like Last Holiday.
Wesley Snipes. Last Holiday, yeah. Christmas movie. Recently, she was Ursula in Little Mermaid Live.
Yeah, I saw that too.
That was a really good performance.
Oh, yeah. Queen Latifah is also in one of Tupac. I think it might be his first movie called Juice. I think he was in Juice before Poetic Justice. Or maybe the other way around. I can't remember. And Queen Latifah is in one of my favorite films. It's called Living Out Loud. She plays a lounge singer in that movie.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's a good movie.
One we'll probably never watch, because I doubt that anybody else in the world's ever heard of this movie. It stars Danny DeVito and Holly Hunter and Queen Latifah.
What?
Yeah. Yeah. It's one of my favorite films. I don't know why. There's just like this great line that's spoken about you really get to see people when you're sitting down in the gutter. Like, Holly Hunter acts the shit out of that movie. And she's like this woman who her husband tells her he never wants to have children. And so then they go through all of their life, and then he leaves her and gets with a younger woman and has kids with her.
What?
And she has no idea what to do with her life. And so she's like beyond, like middle-aged. And then she ends up making friends with Queen Latifah's character, and they become like this like odd pairing friendship.
Huh.
All the while, Danny DeVito's falling in love with her. It's fucking strange. But I love it. Queen Latifah is also a producer. You know, she's responsible for many television shows. And TV movies. So many to list. And let's see. Vivica A. Fox.
Oh, yeah.
She has a Sharknado under her belt. But she also has a Kill Bill and an Independence Day.
Of course.
She's in a movie that I really liked called Why Do Fools Fall in Love? I don't know the name of the guy. I can't remember it. But it's the dude who sings that song. Have you ever heard that song?
No.
Why do fools fall in love? Why do they fall in love?
I don't think so. Oh, I have no idea what that is, but...
Well, apparently he was living three different lives and had three different wives, and then he died, and they all found out about one another. It's like this true story.
Oh, shit.
And she played one of the women. I remember watching this when it was like, I think that it aired on TV, like a movie of the night or something.
Oh, she was also in Ella Enchanted.
I love that movie.
Yeah, she was. She was the fairy godmother, right?
I don't know. I've never seen Ella and Justin.
We have to.
I like that one.
Isn't it something that like she can't decide her own movement?
No, if you tell her to do something, she has to do it. She's obedient.
Oh, okay.
It's supposed to be the gift of obedience, but it's more like a curse.
Yeah. Okay. We'll have to see if that what category that can fall into. Anne Hathaway could be a May Queen sometime.
Definitely. And I think, I'm thinking of something different. Never mind.
Yeah, because I mean, she has that. She definitely has Devil Wears Prada. Uh-huh. I have seen Princess Diaries.
Yes.
That's
you know what I remember from that movie, though?
What?
Honestly? Mandy Moore singing Stupid Cupid.
Yes.
I don't know why. That's what I remember. Stupid Cupid.
I had that set as my alarm recently.
What? That's so random.
I was like, I want 90s.
So random.
I want soundtracks from my childhood as my alarm this week. That was one of the songs.
All right. Well, I think that we're ready to get into it. We've been talking a lot of setup, but again, there were four. Kimberly Elise's first movie. There are four queens in this movie. Awesome film actresses who have been killing their careers. Yeah. So let's get into talking about Set It Off.
Frankie is a Los Angeles bank teller who is fired after a robbery simply because she recognized one of the robbers, although she did not personally know him. Frankie goes to work at Luther's Janitorial Services with her three best friends, Stoney, Cleo, and Titi. Luther treats them with disrespect and pays them low wages. Tired of working a low-paying job, Cleo explains that they should rob a bank themselves. Frankie agrees, but Stoney and TT are reluctant. However, when Stoney's younger brother is gunned down by the police in a case of mistaken identity, and TT's son is taken away from her by Child Protective Services, they too now have the motivation to join the robbery.
So I did forget to write in victim shaming and the triggers, but fuck Detective Strode for putting all of that on Stoney.
Right. And then her boss firing her right off the fucking
bat. On Frankie.
Or on Frankie, yeah, sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, so did you find that realistic?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
1000%, yeah.
Because what I want to think is that the film is not melodramatic.
No, I really didn't think it was melodramatic. I think that is a reaction that we as Americans, like in our culture, be like, oh yeah, that's probably exactly what would happen in that case. Because I mean, most places in this country, you don't, you know, it's at will employment. There's no kind of contract keeping your job. So employers can fire you for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm. And then I think they were very clearly making it about race.
Oh yes, they were.
Oh yeah.
Yes, they were.
And then Frankie was sure to swing it around about race too. What did you think about her comment to Detective Waller about the water?
Yeah, that she didn't even get offered water.
Yeah. She's like, you are really just going along with this and you're okay with it. Fuck you.
Yeah, I love that she just screamed
exactly
at them,
that.
Like, she didn't hold back. She was just like,
but this is not right.
Yeah.
Well, because they needed to know.
You know, and you know, that's how the film starts. I think it starts off really strong. And it starts off really bold when that dude, when Darnell
shoots that woman.
When he grabs a hold of that lady, you know, and she's got, you know, she's got that blonde hair. And then you're going to get that shot of that blood on her hair. And did you notice that when he pulls that trigger, his eyes never leave Frankie?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's viciousness.
Yeah, it's also like directly him saying you caused this. Like, so she has that trauma.
Right.
And that's why I think that she's so shaken, caught up, that she, it's almost as if she, I mean, I'm you're going to shock, of course, but she couldn't believe that it was happening to her. And I think she knew right then and there that because she knew him,
oh yeah.
Yeah, she was gonna become a target.
She was gonna get some blame.
Because I think she was saying, I don't want any part of this. That's why she froze.
Right.
Because she it was beyond shock. It's she already knew that it was all done and over. That he was ruining it.
And that's why she didn't follow procedure, and she couldn't say that to them either. Like, how do you say that to them, that she knew?
Because they never understand. Yeah. But then they would, because they did it to her.
Exactly. But then she'd just be dealing with the white guilt part of it. And they'd be like, how dare you accuse us of this?
But I mean, they have that whole bang shootout and then Frankie is screaming and crying. And then they just like cut to the title card and they let you know this is a serious fucking movie. You guys having not seen the movie and not finding anything about it, when you first start the film, how do you feel?
When he shot her, I was like, whoa, what the fuck? Like, I didn't think it would escalate that quickly. Like, I didn't think we'd start off that quickly. In all honesty, the fact that in the first 45 minutes they rob a bank, like, that was super quick.
Yeah.
Like, the whole film escalated quickly.
Yes.
They set it off.
I know. I was sitting on my couch with it. I was just gaping. Like, I couldn't believe that happened. And, like, you could just see on Frankie's face, like, the horror, but like also the heartbreak. Like Darnell, why would you do this?
Right.
Like,
yeah,
I know you. And then she realizes it's not just him, and she's like, oh shit.
Right.
But when there wasn't even like really much of a song that went into the opening credits for the women, I was like, yeah, this movie is already real, and this is about to get even like,
yeah, exactly,
more real.
But then they do kick it off all disco.
Yeah.
So you have this dissonance between bam, blow your head off, screaming Frankie, and then you're supposed to be like lighten it up
at this party.
And I think maybe that itself is a commentary about the lives that some people live.
Yeah,
that they, like the violence that they have to deal with on a daily basis that other people don't understand, and they have to find this positivity in their life surrounded by this violence and hardship.
Yeah, and that the violence is so normalized.
Exactly. And then you get to, what'd you think about what'd you think about Stoney's idea of the costumed graduation party?
I mean, we had Dad's 50th birthday party as a theme, so I'm not mad at it. I thought it was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Any chance I would get for, I don't know, I feel like Halloween is not enough for me, so I would love it.
And we're introduced to Stoney there, and Cleo, and we get TT, and then of course we get Stoney's brother Stevie,
who tragically dies.
When Detective Strode is talking about the what could that AP mean, asshole, perhaps?
Yeah.
That was such a lame joke.
I know. And they make sure that he says it. And then they make sure they show you that Stevie's going to the AP guy's house when he opens the door, when he turns around and he says it. And then you know when he's getting the AP on his head. I mean, you 95ers, you knew right then and there what was going to happen.
Yeah, I
right?
did. As soon as soon as it happened, I was like, oh shit, he's going to fucking die. And then as he was walking out the door and he put the champagne bottle in his coat, I was like, he's going to fucking die. They're going to think it's a gun. He's going to die.
Now, do you think that your knowledge of that is a product of how the society that you were raised
Absolutely.
In? Like in 1996, would this have been shocking to a certain type of audience, where another type of audience would be like, yeah, we've been trying to tell
right,
you that.
Yeah.
But in 2021, so do you think there's, what do you think about that?
I think it was definitely like accurate to what that time was. And now too, like it's, we've dealt with it so much that we know what it looks like, and that's upsetting.
And it's sad that not a lot has changed.
Right.
I mean, yeah. I mean, it has been over a decade since the film has been released.
Mm-hmm.
And you're absolutely right that there are countless films, but there are countless real life stories that mirror this exact thing. And it is pretty remarkable that it is just in the last, you know, what, from, can we say last 5 years? You know, last, you know, 4 or 5 years that people have thought that maybe there was an issue.
Yeah, things have started changing a little bit more.
But, and then when Stoney is crying over her brother.
Oh my God.
Mm-hmm.
I had tears, guys.
I did too. It was heartbreaking.
It really was. As she wailed, it broke my fucking heart.
Her grief was very, very palpable.
Well, and because she had already proven what she was willing to do and what the brother meant to her.
That was heartbreaking
that was
too.
So terrible.
When she fucking so let's talk about fucking Nate.
Fuck Nate.
When he's like, another time. And he makes her say, I need this money. And he'd said before, you're not getting your money till I get.
Right.
Well, is it?
Till I'm done.
Till
like
I'm
an
done.
Asshole.
And there are people like him there are people like him who women and men have to deal with because they feel like they don't have any other option.
Yeah, they're exploited by people in that position.
Exactly. And you see Stoney's face when he is on top right. of her.
Well, and then, like, after she gets done, like, she goes home and immediately scrubs down. Like, you can tell that she feels disgusted.
And I know that there are people who all of the time, I think, have thought that maybe they kind of deigned themselves from what their expectations were of their life, and they're doing what they have to do to get right. by. And it's not always prostitution, you know, or, you know, people really, they have a stigma on, like, the sex work industry. Like, there's a whole movement about sex work is work because people are against it. But the fact that, you know, Stoney's not a sex worker. She ends up doing this out of desperation. Yeah. And I think that desperation is unfortunately something that a lot of Americans can empathize with.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah, and I'm sure that there are unfortunately way too many Americans who have had to be in that position before.
Yes. And I think that could be a huge, giant, and we say trigger, but sometimes, I wonder if we're wondering that triggers are used to form a bond with a character. Roger Ebert said that he went into this movie expecting like a shoot 'em up gun violence and then like fell in love with the characters when he didn't expect to.
Right.
And I think that sometimes the bad things that are happening are ingratiating that character to us. And the more that we connect with that character or the more that we can feel, the stronger the film impacts us. So, like, it does trigger us that, I mean, she's not being raped, but she's kind of being exploited, extorted.
Yeah.
And that...
She's definitely being yeah. exploited.
And yeah. that feels like a feeling of helplessness and hopelessness.
Yeah, because it was, to her, it was her only option. So, yeah, it's desperation, helplessness, hopelessness, exploitation... all of that wrapped up in one.
And I just hope that when people watch it, they're thinking it's not, this is not just a movie about four. It's not the lady bank no. robber movie.
Yeah. It's not that at all.
Like they do a very good job of setting up why each one of these women wants money,
oh, yeah.
needs money. And I think the only one that doesn't have a real good reason is Cleo.
Oh, yeah. She just wants to have fun with her yeah. life. Life is a party.
Mm-hmm.
But Frankie has been broken. They broke Frankie.
Yeah. She snapped in half.
Yeah.
She lost literally everybody she loved.
You mean at the end, Stoney did?
Oh, wait. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm sorry. I said they broke Frankie at the yeah. bank. When she put in all her time and all her trust and all her work. And then it's really important when she said, I can't even get a recommendation.
I counted $240,000 mm-hmm. for you by hand.
Yeah. Because I think that, again, I don't know for sure because we don't think about it, but I think your address has a lot to do with getting an interview, getting a job.
Mm-hmm.
And people are very biased. I mean, all of the time you hear the cliches about the wrong side of the tracks.
Yeah.
Or the wrong, you know, this number through this number is a good side. This number street through this number street is not.
Mm-hmm.
And Frankie was trying to build something. And once it crumbled, it's like it crumbled to dust. And she couldn't put it back together. And again, so many people, I believe, feel that loss and this inability to do something. And people make stupid decisions in trying to solve their problem quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this movie is also heavily about the choices that you make.
Yeah. So, Titi, she brings her kid to work.
Oh, my.
Are we in that section?
Yeah, because...
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What'd you guys think about that? Again, you knew right when the kid came there?
Yeah, as soon as he...
Or was that a shock?
As soon as he started crawling.
I was like, oh, no. Because, like, I've seen stuff like that happen with good parents who have, like, zero resources. And then they're just stuck in a crappy situation. And I think that today the kid would not have been taken away. The kid, they probably would have gotten plugged in with social services and like gotten help with daycare.
Well, so I was going to wonder if that was a bit of a stretch order to form a reason for TT.
Modern day, that's what my expectations would be, but I don't think that it was the same in the 90s.
No. So then I also then wonder, like, I mean, it should have been enough that she was a single mom trying to raise that kid. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know that we talk enough about, one, how hard it is just to be a two-income household in America, but then to be a one income household with multiple dependents.
Yeah.
And even if she just has one child, there's no mention of a father. You know, we don't get a mention of any other parents except for Stoney's parents who are dead.
Right.
And I think we're supposed to understand that these women only have each other.
Oh yeah. Right.
And I doubt Luther's paying them a lot because Luther's a fucking asshole.
He is a fucking asshole. Yeah.
I fucking hate him. He needs to get his ass kicked by a goddamn Mighty Morphin fucking Power Ranger. Like, Jesus. Hey, but that DCF agent, she also plays Craig's mom in the movie Friday.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So she can't all be that bad. And I love the scene where they get high on the roof.
Yes. That was so cute.
they're sitting there looking out and they talk about the power plant that was, or I don't know if it was a power plant, the factory that was paying $15 an hour. And they're like, they're thinking like, that's so much money in 1996. And like, that would be so much money for some people in 2021.
Yeah.
Like, you know, inflation or like changing it be damned. Like if everybody got paid 50, isn't that the number that people want?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Fight for 15.
The fight for 15.
For minimum wage.
Yeah, for minimum wage. So they're sitting there and just, and I think that in itself is kind of a crazy statement that, in 1996, they thought that $15 was a dream. And then in 2021, when we for sure know that $15 in 96 is now like over $20 today, and still it's a dream for some people to get $15 an hour. Yeah. Like the way that people live in poverty in America is just glossed over because we all live above our means and then put flashy stuff on social media.
Yep.
But there are people who live beyond paycheck to paycheck. They live in the hole.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that we give enough seriousness to that and the motivation and how that in itself breaks you down. Because you don't feel like there's a way out. There are people who don't live in these projects with no parents and children and crappy jobs who still feel like, oh, what's the point of life and where am I heading with stuff? You know? And then so then to be this kind of desperate, I don't know if that portrayal has become mainstream now. So if we're also numb to that. Like if the portrayal of these women is now cliche, or if it is been so like given through our media and our information that we're so knowledgeable about their lives now.
I'm not so sure, because There's such a stigma about being poor. And our society just wants to smash all of that down. So it's really difficult to move forward on something like that.
And like being poor is your fault.
Yeah. And there are so many people out of touch with that. And they don't understand why people are kept down and poor and in poverty. And it's just, there's a real disconnect.
Yeah. 95ers?
Yeah, there's definitely a huge disconnect. And it's just like, I don't know. It makes me angry when I think about it, even just a little bit, because it's like people work so, so, so hard, work 3 jobs and just like barely scrape by.
Yeah.
And sometimes, like, depending on their circumstances, that's not even enough. And it's just like, yeah, I don't know. It's just sad that
I work with
the quality of life could be so much better for so many people if we would just, you know, like, if the people in power would just, like, suck it up and help us out more. Right.
Hey, do we even want to talk about and compare COVID relief around the world?
Ugh.
I don't know if we want to go down that rabbit hole. Oh, my God.
No.
That is, you mean we don't get all the help we could?
Definitely not.
Jeez.
Did you know in Germany that they have parking spaces marked for women that are in better lit areas with more security and cameras? And I'm like, what the fuck? Do they want it? Why don't we do that here? And that's just like a thing they do everywhere.
That is just such a simple thing to do to make someone feel safer.
Yes.
I'm a man and I've listened and women, I do think about their safety all of the time.
I mean, we have to constantly,
and that's just like, that's heartbreaking.
I mean, we have to constantly be aware all the time.
Yeah. So then something like, I'm over here thinking, oh yeah, something as simple as just telling you this is a more lit area. That's fucking sad.
With cameras. Closest to the door.
But I mean, so it's fucking sad. But then I guess I'm also like, okay, good job, Germany.
You know?
But then still fucking sad that it even has to exist like that.
Yeah.
But then, it seems like we don't progress very well in certain things, but in other areas, we do.
It's like there's so much that needs work that we can only fix a little bit here and there at a time.
I mean, we've perfected Viagra.
Right.
And we sure do know how to make a Super Bowl commercial.
But insulin is still as expensive as fuck.
And people are dying.
But we have a lot of tobacco brands. And we now have different ways that you can get nicotine into your body. And you can wear underwear that makes you orgasm when somebody else controls it. We have our priorities in check, people.
We really do.
Yeah, fucking just check our Instagrams. Everything is fine.
That's right. We have put on a facade. Okay, so she gets her kid taken away. We get this set up for all these women.
And the 4 women embark on a series of successful bank robberies due to Frankie's inside knowledge of bank protocol with money and security. An investigation by LAPD Detective Strode ensues. Strode suspects that Cleo, because of her prior convictions, Frankie, because of her inadvertent connection to the earlier robbery and subsequent firing, and Stoney, because of her brother's death, are all involved. But his superior refuses to allow him to bring them in for questioning because he doesn't feel that evidence is sufficient. Concerned with the safety of their money, the 4 women stash the money in an air vent at one of their work sites.
And that little shit stole it.
Oh my God. I was really glad that Detective Strode's superior was a black man who was just like, nope, I'm keeping you in check because this is messed up.
Yeah, it's very strange because, again, like, messages from the film, they, like, a lot of times in films, they make the person who is actually right into the bad guy.
Mm-hmm. Or the scapegoat.
And Strode is right. The women are guilty. Mm-hmm. They're doing it. But because of what happened with the brother, because we're set up to see him as the villain already, and because we're set up to like the women so much and feel for them, we're also kind of being skewed as a society to always see authority as bad. And I don't know that that's very healthy as a society either.
No.
It's not, but
no.
They also shouldn't be doing the bad things that they're doing. Like
robbing banks?
Yeah.
Yeah, like robbing banks.
Yeah, like we forget, like, these women are committing crimes. Yeah.
And they do eventually...
like, we feel sorry for them.
They do eventually kill people.
And, like, I remember watching this the first time around, being like, yeah, they're getting some revenge. Like, I was like, you know, like, liking them and like, oh yeah, ha ha ha. They're, like, in a lighthearted way, watching this movie, being like, yay. Right. They're getting what they deserve.
But then, like, that's why I think this movie is, like, escapism, right? Like, right. It's, like, the fantasy. All right, so have any of you ever thought about robbing a bank?
I mean, like, yeah, I've had, like, daydreams about it, about, like, what I would do with the money afterwards, but I've never, like, actually considered robbing a bank.
Right?
Yeah,
of course you like, you want to rub the money all over your body. Like, you would never, like... It's few and far between the people who would actually walk into a bank to rob it.
Yeah. I mean, I've never planned a bank. I used to work at a bank before I left my hometown to go to college. And you would count tons of money. And you would see them open the safe. And oh my God. It was just like, oh my God.
I can't imagine. I've always daydreamed about like how I would get away with something, but like not necessarily rob a bank.
Like just anything. You're trying to get away with anything.
Yeah.
She's playing a getaway.
Yes. And I think I've got a pretty solid method, but I can't talk about it.
Okay. Yeah, because if any of us ever need your method.
She's not sharing. She is keeping that to herself.
Yep.
Whenever she disappears, we're not even going to be able to hear her on the podcast anymore. All trace of Ashley will just be gone.
You won't know what happened to me.
Somehow, all audio clips will disappear and just be replaced with, like, some random noise.
She's been scrubbed of all existence.
It'll just be like, dandelion, dandelion, dandelion.
It'll just be a robot reading binary.
Yes. Completely random. I love during this part when they're celebrating their bank robbery and Cleo is like,
woo! Yeah, she fires the gun
and then she shoots in the air and Stoney's like, Cleo, sit down. I just love that part.
I know.
Ooh.
Like, when was the last time you did a desk pop?
I forgot, guys. One of my favorite quotes, I'm strictly dickily.
Oh, yes. Now, Cleo, I done told you I'm strictly dickly. Yeah, because so we have to talk about Cleo fucking grabs her tits.
Yeah, she does. Yeah,
that's wrong, Cleo.
Yeah, Cleo does a lot of wrong shit.
Yeah. Well, isn't this the part where they get into their fight and she puts the gun to Stoney's head?
I think so. Mm-hmm. Or wait, no. Not yet.
That's later.
No. Is that after they...
Well, I think that's after the second robbery.
Yeah, so when the money that they got and then they stash in the air vent.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this is when because they, after their first robbery when Cleo quits her job or stops showing up, spends all the money on the car, and then starts, like, caressing her girlfriend on the hood of the car, all sexy-like. And then they bust in on her, and they're like, get back to work. And then, because then they have they end up sitting down and they have a conversation that I want to talk about, because I think it's fucking real. And what we've been discussing is the where do you see yourself in 5 years? And Cleo, it fucking, again, it breaks my heart that she does not see a life for herself.
Yeah.
She calls herself a hood rat, says that even if she leaves, she'll always be out of place.
Well, yeah,
she says she has no plan to even think of her future.
She says something about just living day to day. And, like, I feel like a lot of people think that way. Like, it's just getting through one day at a time.
Just trying to make it.
Like,
yeah.
It really puts into perspective, like, when I think that I'm having a hard time, like, not to invalidate my feelings, because it doesn't matter your socioeconomic level, feelings are feelings, but they do have a thing called first world problems, where sometimes you just need to shut the fuck up with what's wrong with you, because what's wrong with somebody else is fucking killing them.
Yeah.
And they're drowning in a tub of oil, where maybe you're lost on a luxury yacht.
Right.
You know? And so when they're sitting there having that conversation, it's just like, that's people's lives.
Yeah.
And then it's justification for us liking them when they decide to do something about it.
Right.
Even though it's robbing banks. In their first couple of robberies, nobody gets hurt.
Right.
The only deaths we have so far are the three guys who robbed the bank at the beginning. I think there are maybe one or two cops who die in the shootout when they catch the third robber. I think maybe one or two security guards die.
Yeah, a couple. Mm-hmm. And then that lady that gets shot in the beginning too.
Yeah. And the lady. Yeah. By the end, there may be only five more deaths, with three of them being some of our main characters. You know, Stevie got gunned down. I don't know if we... But there does seem to be quite a bit of violence.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And each act of violence is connected with a very strong emotional and, like, societal tie. I mean, you said before that there's no music when it drops the women's names, and we said how serious this gets.
Mm-hmm. Now let's take a break and hear about our sponsor. And now back to the show. While casing a bank with TT, Stoney meets the bank manager, Keith, whom she starts dating. When Cleo, Frankie, and TT show up for work one day and find a new boss in charge, they quickly realize that Luther has discovered the money and fled with it. While Stoney attends a banking event with Keith, the three women track Luther to a motel where he is sleeping with a prostitute. They demand the return of their money. Luther informs them that the money is gone and pulls a gun on Cleo, and TT kills him in self-defense. Stoney is disappointed with Frankie and TT about the missing money and Luther's death. Frankie and Cleo persuade TT and Stoney that they need to rob another bank and leave town the next day.
How the fuck did he find that money?
I have no idea.
Did he have cameras? I feel
like he must have been, like, watching them or something.
Yeah.
Which I wouldn't put it past him. He seemed like a total creep.
He's probably watching on cameras.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh.
I there's a line in this movie that I love every time I hear
it. Say it.
And it has to do with Luther. You want me to say it? Climb out that pussy, Luther.
Oh my God.
Thank you, Queen Latifah. Yes. Your delivery of that line and your hit of Luther, I love. I love.
It was good.
I love. We've got that whole scene where it ends up being TT who kills Luther. And she didn't participate in the first bank robbery.
Right.
So now she did the second one. And in the second bank robbery, she gets the drop on that cop. And then in this time, she kills Luther. It's like T.T.'s got a little more in her than even she knew right. She had in her.
Mm-hmm.
But then she has a hard time dealing with what she's done.
Yeah. And she has so much on the line with her kid, too. And, like, I don't think she ever expected to be in any of these positions.
Oh, no.
No, and she's in a constant state of sadness and almost near hysteria at the thought of losing her kid.
I think I feel the worst for her out of all four of them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because of the mother, child.
Well, and loss. Also because of her character. Because
just because of that. And then I just feel like she really, you know, worked really hard. She believed she was a really, really good person. And everybody loved her, protected her. And then, you know, the accident with her kid. And now suddenly she's robbing banks because she's desperate.
Exactly. And I think that goes to show that you never think about how your life's going to turn out or how your choices might lead you down a darker path. You're just trying to make it day by day. Mm-hmm. And I think that more people do need to stop and realize that you might be somewhere that you didn't think you'd end up. And
that anyone can be somewhere anyone. You didn't think they would end up.
And for some people, that path leads to a very tragic, violent death. They, of course, think that Cleo has killed Luther. And they pick her up and take her in for the lineup. What'd you think about the behavior of Waller and Strode during that lineup?
Pressure much?
Yeah, that's the reason why witness, like, identification is so inaccurate.
Because they fucking pressure people when they think they're guilty.
Yep.
I mean, Waller, she put her hands on that she was a prostitute, right?
Yeah. I don't know if she like has a name in.
I don't think they said a name.
Yeah. And she was like, I only met him tonight.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, so who knows? We may be assuming she's a prostitute. Maybe she, you know, she just liked Luther and they just met that night. But you've got Cleo who like pats her chest.
Yeah.
And, like, you're thinking, like I like Cleo. But, like, Cleo immediately when Luther is dead grabs that license, threatens that woman, mm-hmm. and then has no qualms about letting the woman think she's going to come back and kill her.
Mm-hmm.
Cleo pulls a gun on her best friend, Stoney. Cleo quits her job after one bank robbery where they made minimal amount of money.
Right.
Because I think from the moment she's done it, she's hooked. And she's like, yeah, I'm going to get a bunch of money.
Yeah.
Like, she made up her mind the very first time that she wasn't done.
So, we have different types of characters in this movie. Even the four women are different representations, I think, even within the group that they represent. You have, of course, Strode. Even down to how the guys who rob the bank from Acorn Projects, who then are different and behave differently than like the four women, the main characters who we follow robbing these banks. You have got Waller, who is a female character behaving in a way. Then you even have the representation that the social worker is a strong black woman who's doing her job. And then you have the goddamn bankers. Keith, I guess it's not so bad.
No, he's not bad.
But do you remember the fucking white banker making a joke about if something happened in this room, the banks would never recover?
Yeah.
I did not.
And the wife who's like, all dolled up at the banking event.
Yeah, and right? then he said mm-hmm. something about, like, oh, this is the woman that you scored with the other day or whatever, like... Or he mentioned...
Oh, no, Miss New yeah, Account.
Miss New Account. I don't
remember exactly what he said, but he, like, remembered her as, like, someone that he was hitting on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so then you've got Keith, who they make jokes about. He's from Harvard. He's educated. His fucking apartment house is so fucking strange. Like, it's one giant room.
Yeah, giant room that...
Yeah, and, like...
With, like, a bed and uncomfortable chairs that Jada Pinkett Smith is tiny
that
in.
That chair that he sits her in is really weird.
I know. Sit here while I cook you Mexican food.
Right.
What?
It's because they spent all their money on blanks.
Yeah. I love how Jada Pinkett Smith dresses in this movie. She dresses like she's not trying to impress this dude at all.
No. Right.
And so you've got him, and he's talking, I mean, rather naively, rather bougie, rather entitled, right?
Mm-hmm.
Privileged.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Even with, I mean, when he makes the comment about, take me somewhere in your hood.
Yeah.
And she, you could tell she's uncomfortable. And because she already is uncomfortable about their different economic status. Right. Mm-hmm. And she's like, we've got nothing in common. And you think about it, and does he only like her because she's beautiful?
And now I've been trying to figure that out because, like, I don't know. I think that appearance is very important for him, and that's why he was like, no, the only thing I lied about tonight was I actually don't like your outfit, and then bought her a new one.
Yeah.
Yeah, he pretty womans her.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Was that an okay thing? Like, that's not, like, misogynistic? That's not, like, mansplaining? Like, I mean, was that okay?
When they get there, I feel like it's kind of like when they first have him do it, it's like kind of offensive. And I'm kind of like, oh, well, he didn't like the way that she looked. But then when they get there and they're arriving, it can basically like a red carpet where she's going to be like looked at and inspected. Like if she had gone in the outfit she was in, she would have been.
Yeah. So he was
looked at like a hood, like a quote right. hood rat.
And then she would have felt more uncomfortable. Felt
right. Uncomfortable so and out
he kind of
place.
Saved her a little bit with that.
I just think it's funny that she was told Frankie helped dress her.
Yeah.
To get it. So Frankie thought that was fly. She thought that was going to be, it was going to knock him dead. All right. What did you guys think about Stoney and Keith's sex scene?
The montage.
Yeah.
They're
more than friends.
Both of the montages in this movie were fantastic.
Did anything strike you in the sex scene as odd?
The necklace?
Yeah.
I was like, you're getting too close to her butt crack with that for my comfort.
In there. I halfway think they did it there to draw you to the attention of Jada Pinkett's
butt crack.
Yeah.
But like, she already has an amazing
She's
butt.
She's a very attractive oh, yes. woman.
Like, her butt needs no introduction. Like, yeah. They
yeah,
don't.
It is. It's got its yeah own zip code. It is 90210.
It's its own territory. Like it's yeah.
And so I think it's. But then I'm thinking to myself like, would that turn you on? Like
the necklace?
Like because that's like
down your butt.
Like
crack?
Don't put a necklace down my butt yeah. crack. That's not getting any like.
Yeah. No reaction.
I'm not
there.
Getting a reaction from that. But I think he, like, oiled her up and then, like, ran the necklace down. And, yeah, it was very sensual.
Points for creativity, but no.
Yeah. I also think that we are supposed to have a dichotomy between Stoney's earlier sexual experience that was so
horrible,
deflating and horrible to this one which was so liberating.
Right. And it was like so focused on her needs. What she wanted. So it was a nice change of pace for her.
Yeah.
And I had remarked earlier about Jada Pinkett Smith's acting in this movie. And of course she wails over her brother. But when she walks out of Keith's apartment after sleeping with him, she has no idea the money's gone. And she thinks that's the last time she's going to see him.
Mm-hmm.
And she's going to leave.
Yeah.
And she's kind of crying. Do you think she's crying because she's going to miss him, or because she's thinking she shouldn't go, or now that she has done something she can't take back and she has to leave, that's when she finds something worth staying for?
Yeah, well, and then
I think, she didn't imagine
all of the above. Ashley, I'm sorry, what?
I don't think she imagined her life getting any better than that, and then just the fact that she had to go, risk herself again. Like, that's what was so upsetting.
You mean when she's walking out of the house, she thinks that she's walking out with the money they already have.
Oh yeah, that's right.
So she just legit. So I'm wondering if she's just crying because she's like upset that she has to leave him.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I just thought that was a good moment for her.
Oh,
because
yeah.
Everything in her life, she seems to be torn. And no matter what choices she makes, she seems to make the wrong one. Or to her, it seems like it makes things harder. And I mean, I fucking totally empathize with that. And I think a lot of people do.
The women decide to rob downtown Federal Bank where Keith works. Concerned for Keith's safety and not wanting him to know she's a bank robber, Stoney calls Keith and tells him to meet her at a cafe far from the bank's location. The four women quickly execute the robbery, but Cleo demands that TT grab more money, which gives Strode enough time to arrive. Strode and his partner try to talk them into surrendering. As TT and Stoney begin to put down their weapons, a bank security guard shoots TT. A shootout ensues as Stoney shoots the guard and an enraged Cleo opens fire on the detectives. The women eventually drive away, though TT succumbs to her wound and dies in Stoney's arms. The three remaining women attempt to outrun the police in vain. Cleo tells Stoney and Frankie that they have to split up and to take care of her share of the money with them.
That broke my heart.
This is when you turned it off.
This is when I lost my shit, guys.
Did you lose your shit when she was shot, or when Stoney was talking to her about the banana flambés?
The banana flambés. Like, she's, like, so sure. Like, she's just remembering. She's talking to her. Like, she's just having this conversation, and she doesn't even know that she's dead. And, like it just... Dang it!
Can you imagine that's the memory that you go to? I mean, she goes on this date with Keith to a restaurant that she's never been to and only heard of. And, like, she lives in that area. And then as TT's dying, they think about, do you remember that one time we went to that one restaurant and had those banana flambés?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And that's their memory.
Like, it was special to them to go to a restaurant to have a special dessert.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the life that they're living. I even think that's how disconnected we even as podcast hosts are.
Right. Oh, yeah, for sure.
To think about the reality of that kind of life for anybody to have to be going through in any country. And I think that they kill TT first because that's like ripping off the Band-Aid. Like, after that, are you thinking that, I mean, anyone's up for grabs now?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And that's the security guard who did it. Like, don't you think that was criminal?
Absolutely. Yes.
He pops out of nowhere. They were putting their weapons down. She wasn't even armed when he shot her.
They were not resisting arrest. Therefore, he should not have used lethal force.
He was just a bank security guard.
Well, and Cleo was the only one that had a gun at that time.
So then now, she then opened fires. And that's when she kills the guard. Mm-hmm. And that's the point of no return.
Yep. Right.
Like, they might have gone to prison. Or maybe, I mean, and that's what they were going to do. They were going to give up and get arrested when they were putting their guns down.
Yeah.
And then after TT's dead, but it's after Cleo shoots that guard, that's when, I mean, it is just insane chaos.
Mm-hmm.
And they have this insane chase scene. And you know, and Stoney knows, when she hugs Cleo and they get out of that car,
that they're not going to see her again.
Yeah.
You guys, the only thing I could think of during the car chase scene was car chase. Maybe that's the name of the game. So grouping up totally lame.
What is that?
It's from Tenacious D.
It's the song where they're driving from the cops.
Sing it again because I couldn't hear you.
It's Car Chase City. That's the name of the game. It was all groovy. Now it's totally lame. KG, really fucking blues, man. Now I'm fucking.
I love it. Tune in to Millennial Movie Mix, where occasionally we'll sing to you.
Yes. Welcome to Mediocre Karaoke Podcast.
Mediocre Karaoke. I like. Of course, at this bank, it just so happens that Strode and Waller were just there. So then they're really close to get there. But it is entirely Cleo's fault for telling TT to grab more money.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
They should not have grabbed more money.
Well, Cleo just fucks up everything.
Yeah. She did save them with driving through the wall in that second bank robbery.
Yeah, she owed him that.
That was a nice, happy moment when they're screaming and then hugging one another over the car.
Mm-hmm.
You've got Strode, and he talks them down.
And then Frankie whips back that quote from when she got victim shamed, and I was like, oh, God, she's going to die.
Oh, yeah, that when she comes back up after they're separated. Yeah, go into the next section already.
The police find Cleo, who proceeds to lead them on a high-speed chase until she's cornered. She drives through a police barricade, which causes the police to shoot at her car and blow out her tires. Refusing to surrender, she leaps from her car, firing her gun, and is killed by the police. Frankie is found a short time later, and Strode attempts to get Frankie to surrender. Frankie attempts to run, but is shot in the back and killed. Stoney, who had managed to blend in with a tourist group headed to Mexico, tearfully watches this from a passing charter bus. Strode sees her from a distance, but lets her go. In Mexico, Stoney mourns the losses of her friends and brother and cuts off her hair. Stoney calls Keith to assure him that she is all right and thanks him. She hangs up the phone and smiles, and she's seen driving through the mountains with the stolen money from the robberies in the town.
When Cleo puts the cigarette in her mouth and the song starts playing, that just like that slow, soothing music, and it's juxtaposed with what's about to happen, with the extreme, utter violence and booms and blasts. That's good cinema.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, she was finally at peace with some decision that she was making.
But still crying and showing emotion it's heart-wrenching. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, she was coming to terms with her death, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She knew when she told them to get out of the car. Did Cleo know when she pulled the trigger on the security guard? Or is Cleo, she told you before, she didn't see a future for her. Was she prepared to die every fucking day?
Oh, yeah.
Probably.
And like, that's just a life that's unimaginable, but it exists in America, I'm sure, in 2021.
Definitely. And in more people's minds than you think.
You read the description, and it says those cops blew out her tires.
They shot the fuck out of her car.
Yeah, they yeah.
When she steps out, she's already shot and covered in blood.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then she unloads those guns, and you're like, Cleo, it's very hard to have sympathy for you when you keep killing or shooting. Like,
making these things worse. Yeah.
It's like, you have chosen to go out, but now we're getting the blaze of glory moment. Mm-hmm. And it wouldn't have been right for her to take out police officers in that moment, you know, for what she was doing. It's just like, I don't know. It's a horrible fucking scene. And it's hard to watch. And as Queen Latifah gets shot and falls down on that car door, and then on the ground, she acts the fuck out of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and like, her eyes cross at the end too when she's fallen and everything.
And that fucking TV newscaster, this is what we all were worried was going to happen. The culmination of tragic events. Was that fucking, I mean...
That was a smack in the face to the audience. Shit.
Yeah.
But then, what else is supposed to happen? You know, and like, this is something that's a hard thing to discuss. Like, with Frankie, what are they supposed to do? Were they supposed to let her just run away and they'll catch her later? But then you're like, you're not supposed to fucking shoot her in the goddamn back and the fucking heart.
Well, I mean, you don't have to, like, shoot her with bullets. There are other measures you could take. It's not like you have to resort to the most violent way to bring someone in.
Well, again, the overkill of, like, there's like 30 cops there all shooting her.
But then she did just have a gun to this detective's head.
Well,
and Ashley, you're right, she throws that back in his face, and I love that moment. But it's so, I keep saying the word heartbreaking because this movie breaks my heart.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that, you know, that it took all of this, it took these women's lives, and it took, I'm fucking blanking on
Stevie.
Stevie, thank you. It took Stevie's death, and then all of a sudden it is Strode who is, like, changing and growing and learning, and the fact that he lets Stoney go in the end, we're supposed to be like, oh, thank you, Strode.
Yeah.
Right.
Or he doesn't do shit because he realizes he's shit, and he literally just turns his back and walks away. Not just from Stoney, from the investigation, from Frankie, from all of those other cops. Like, we might not know. He might be broken.
Well, I mean, he did seem really, really upset when Stevie got shot. He was the one that was like, call an ambulance, you know, like.
Because he realized, like, immediately when he got to him, it was a champagne bottle and not a gun. And, like, he really fucked up. And then he found out about, like, he was a good kid, his parents were dead, he was on his way to college, and he was like, oh my gosh, I completely ruined both of these guys' lives, but he, like, wasn't ready to apologize yet, which is kind of shitty.
Right.
And then he finally got to a place where he was like, I am so sorry, because he realized that his actions, like, drove these women to do this.
Well, and before, I had said something about, you know, he's in the right, you know, these women are criminals, you know, and he's supposed to be the one who is doing his job. But I want to add a spin now. Do you think it was more important that these women were guilty to alleviate his guilt for Stevie? Like, if his sister was guilty and the people he associated with were guilty, then maybe it wasn't so bad.
Yeah.
Like, do you want, like, is it that dark?
I think that's possible. But I didn't pick that up.
Yeah, okay. I didn't really.
Maybe I'm going dark. I don't know. I've seen this movie, I don't know, more times than I can count. And I was really, like, you know, trying to think about.
You're diving deep.
I'm diving deep. But we've been diving deep for a while. We've gotten to the end of the movie. Stoney gets the money. No friends, no family, no Keith.
Right.
So she's got money.
But
she got money. She's about to set it off.
Right. But is it worth it?
Yeah. That's yeah.
Was it? I don't think it would have been.
No.
Mm-mm. Nope.
And I think that's. I don't know if the movie does a good enough job of saying that at the end.
Right.
Because it has her drive off in, like, a Jeep.
Yeah.
And she's got all the money. I don't think she has all the money. I bet she has half the money.
Yeah, I think it's probably half.
Because I think Frankie had half.
Yeah, Frankie was carrying the bag.
And it has her remembering all of the girls and then crying.
Yeah.
But then still, like, having the money and looking right. at it and, like, being happy that she has it.
Mm-hmm.
I would be way too guilty, like, to even use it. I would feel so terrible.
I know, because, like, no matter what you bought with it, it would be like, oh, my friends died, so I could have this thing.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's why I think that we're probably, I mean... Should Stoney have died too? Would that have been a more realistic? Would that have been a better message ending? Was this too... I mean, this was not a happy ending, but was it too happy for Stoney?
I find it unbelievable that the detective would have seen her and not wanted to capture her.
Okay.
But because, like, the whole time before, you see that he is such a, like, a cop. He's such a detective. He, you know, they make sure that, you know, he's very, like, white and making all these silly jokes and, you know, playing by the rules. And so at the end, when he sees a fugitive he's been trying to catch, I don't think that made sense, really.
That he just let her go.
Yeah.
Unless we're supposed to see that that's the break.
Right. Or like, yeah, that he's like, well, you know what? I can't take this anymore, and I'm not going to see her dead over money, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so now's the point where we talk about our overall Snowflake ratings and where the three of you can say whether or not you recommend the film, because of course I do.
I would probably give this movie 2 snowflakes, solid 2 snowflakes.
Just 2.
Well, I'm kind of on low on the scale of snowflakery.
I would give this movie 4 snowflakes.
I gave it 3.
Oh my.
Because I don't know. I feel like, you know, like I talked to people about this movie. I was like, it's really sad that it's still relevant with
a lot when of you talked to people, with. had they heard of this movie?
Some of them, yeah.
Okay, so I didn't know if you had to, like, try to explain it to them.
No. Not always.
Yeah, I mean, this is one where I might... I don't know. I mean, I know that the events that take place in the film are entirely relevant and realistic mm-hmm. and thought-provoking and feeling-provoking. And I guess that could mean, I mean, triggering.
Oh, yeah.
But I would still recommend it.
And what?
But I would still recommend it.
You would still recommend it?
Yeah, me too.
Oh, yeah.
I think that, I don't know, what is the 3 snowflakes? Thankful for change?
No,
I can't say that.
That's 2 snowflakes. 3 would be like social media or something.
Yeah, I don't like social media. I don't know. I wonder if this would, I mean, I would hope this would trigger everybody or make everybody think about things. So I might give it a 3, but I don't know that this one is a don't watch this because it's trigger. I think that this movie is almost education. It is enlightening. It is something to make you think. And so even with 3 snowflakes, I'm going to recommend it. And I love this film.
I think that's why I gave it 2, because I see it more of as like a commentary. And like there were reasons why every piece of triggering material was in this movie.
Yeah.
And that's how I kind of come at snowflakes. And I also do recommend this movie just because of all of the heavy issues within it.
I just think it's way too real. But then I said before, is it an escapist movie? Because you're following along with these women outlaws, but then at the end they all die. So it's not a good escapist movie, right?
No.
It's more of a, oh, you thought, okay, I better just work harder at my job then. Wah, wah. So, yeah. But still, I completely enjoyed the viewing, and I've seen this more times than I can count. And I really hope that you guys did too. I have got to work on connecting something in this movie to Buffy the Vampire Slayer. I hope that we can get some people who might be listening who have never watched Buffy to go over and watch Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Ashley, watch Buffy. If we all talk about it enough.
Yeah, maybe we can at least get Ashley to start watching it.
Yes, I will start.
I don't know. I know that Vivica A. Fox is in Idle Hands, and there were I've already done it! Seth Green is in Idle Hands.
Ah.
And Seth Green was Oz in Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
That's right.
See, yeah, thank you, Brain. I knew we needed to start with Vivica A. Fox. Hey, I already got that. You don't even need to, but you should still probably check out
our Facebook page, Millennial Movie Mix.
And our Instagram at Millennial Movie Mix Podcast.
And don't forget to join us next Monday in our May Queens category for Connie and Carla from 2004.
That's right. Connie, Carla. If you have not seen this film, go and watch it right now so that next time when we talk about the film, you could really enjoy it. Ashley and Sarah, I hope to God you two have no idea what this movie's about.
I don't know.
0 for now.
You do?
No, I don't know.
Do not read any descriptions. Simply click play and just start watching.
Okay.
And then listeners, you come back next week and we really are glad that you listened to us. Thanks. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.